Blog Talk Radio.
Mode 1.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
If you are a single heterosexual man listening to this episode right now, let me ask you a question or two. When you approach a woman of interest, do you display a boatload of highly self-assured confidence toward her? More specifically, when it comes to letting a woman know that it is your specific desire to have sex with this woman of interest, are you upfront and straightforwardly honest about that intention? If the answer is no to both questions, then maybe you need to improve your level of cockfidence. Yes, you heard me correctly. You need to improve your level of cockfidence. Just what is cockfidence? I will not get into all the details of this fairly new concept, but let's just say it involves a lot of presence, acceptance, confidence, generosity, passion, empathy, curiosity, spontaneity, and sensuality. Fellas, are you ready for the challenge? My guests this evening are two female book authors and sex advisors who have made it their mission to assist men in improving their level of personal self-confidence as well as their degree of courage towards letting women of interest know that they want to get down and dirty with them. Who are these women who coined the catchy term cockfidence and spell out in detail in their book by the same name how single heterosexual men can benefit from their unique brand of advice? Their names are Dr. Danielle Harrell and Ms. Celeste Hirschman. And tonight, Dr. Harrell and Ms. Hirschman are going to go into more detail about what every single man needs to know in order to improve his level of confidence as these two seasoned sex advisors take time out of their very busy schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, is this A. Alan Roger Curry of Mode 1 fame? Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in their race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, Mode 1, this is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode 1, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Articulate sex therapists about what men need to do to create a higher degree of sexual interest in women, sexual chemistry with women, sexual compatibility, and they have a catchy one-word name for it that's also the title of their book. First, I want to apologize, and I know my, they say don't bite the hand that feeds you, but I've been having some issues with Blog Talk Radio. And if one of their administrators is listening right now, I got beef with BTR. Because as you can tell, my show normally starts at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern, right on the dot. And today it didn't get started until like 10:05 because there was some kind of technical difficulties. I don't like that. I don't like that. I'm going on record saying that BTR, do better. Do better than this. This is like the third show in the 2012-2013 season that I've had some degree of technical difficulties associated with my show, and I do not like it. I will just leave it at that right now. Next week, I have no idea who will be on my show, and that happens sometimes. I do not have a confirmed guest just yet. Ideally, I was hoping to have the actor Morris Chestnut on my show next week, but his publicist kind of left me hanging, to put it frankly. And, yeah, I mean, I was hoping, because see, me and Morris, he's not just an actor. I mean, he's actually somebody I knew personally when I lived in Los Angeles. We used to play video games together. We used to call Madden NFL. I've been over his crib and everything. So it ain't like I'm a stranger to Morris. He knows me. I know him. But he didn't confirm. But, yeah, I wanted him on next week to talk about his movie, The Best Man Holiday. But, again, his publicist kind of sort of left me hanging, to put it mildly. So, anyway, we'll see what happens next week. I might just have an open forum discussion about labels. There was an issue on one of my Facebook pages that dealt with the whole issue of labels. So that might be my topic next week. Like, for example, when should women be called whores, sluts, bitches? When should men be called jerks, asshole, dickheads? Are labels valid, invalid, appropriate, inappropriate? I don't know for sure if that's going to be my topic, but if I don't confirm a guest, that's going to be my topic for next week. It's going to be an open forum discussion about subjective labels. 2 weeks from now, I do have a confirmed guest. It will be professional dating coach Jordan Harbinger. Jordan Harbinger will be on my show 2 weeks from tonight, and he runs an organization called the School of Charm. I will have him on my show. Some shout-outs in my chat room would be my number one most loyal listener, Diva362636. I'm mad at Diva right now. I got beef with Diva. Well, number one, first I'm going to give her kudos. She's always a multitasker. On Thursday, she listens to my show. She watches Scandal, and she watches whatever important NBA game and or NFL game is on. So she be doing like 3-4 things at once. So in that area, I give her kudos. But before the NBA season start, you know, she talked some shit to me about Derrick Rose and the Bulls, and I think she put some kind of voodoo hex on them because they playing like crap, and I'm pissed. And I'm taking out my passivity on Adrian with her Miami Heat-loving ass. That's right. So, Adrian, it's your fault that the Bulls are losing. Matter of fact, they interviewed Derrick Rose the other night. It was like, Derrick, what seems to be the problem? He said, hey, you know, I was playing well before this woman named Adrian Yates. Oops, I said last name. Adrian just started hexing me and dogging me out. Yep. Anyway, she's in my chat room. It's Diva362636. I got Aaron 2213 in my chat room. I got Christian Davis in my chat room. I got Frankie. Frankie got that real resonant voice. He's in my chat room. I got a number of guests in my chat room. And look who's in my chat room. This brother ain't been in here in a while. Jason Barnes, he used to be a host on Blog Talk Radio himself. Very provocative. He always loved to stir the pot and start shit. And he goes by the alias 6ix9ine. He's in my chat room. If you remember some of my past episodes, you remember he called in, like, for example, when I interviewed Sophia A. Nelson. Jason, man, just lit into her, man. I mean, he had no mercy. No mercy. But he's in my chat room. And then I got somebody by the name of Stop Whining and Start Winning. Stop whining and start winning. Okay, yeah, I agree. Stop whining and start winning. And then I got Jazz Kaz in my chat room. So welcome. Other shout-outs will be my older brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry. My younger cousins, Christopher Curry in Detroit, J.P. Jones in Chicago, at the bar in Maplewood, New Jersey, Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam the third, EVP3 in Seattle. That's right, Seattle. Other shout-outs will be Edie Lee Harris, Vanessa Turner, Paulina Long, Corey Pullman, Maurice Taylor, Jeff Kent, Ruben Flores, Leandra Sloan, Delita Mitchell, and the lovely members of my female supporters group on Facebook. Yeah, the Bulls been fucking up. I'm almost ready to write them off. I'm so pissed. They lost to the Pacers last night. They're just not looking good. You know, they're just not looking good. The Bears, though, they beat the Packers. That's always good. I always love when the Bears just beat the shit out the Packers. Well, okay, put an asterisk next to it. The Packers lost Aaron Rodgers to an injury, and truthfully, that's half the reason why the Bears won. But, hey, a win is a win. A win is a win. So we'll take it. We will take it. Now, you know there's been some drama in the NFL with this supposed bullying scenario with a guy named Richie Incognito. What a last name, Incognito. He supposedly was bullying this guy named Jonathan Martin. And the whole thing reminds me of the movie A Few Good Men. I mean, they say the coaches told Incognito to toughen up Jonathan Martin, but Jonathan Martin ended up leaving. Now the coaches wiping their hands of any blame, and they just threw Incognito under the bus. And now Incognito suspended, and the N-word was used. And, man, it's just a big mess. NFL is taking a hit in terms of their image, public relations. They've been taking some hits this in the last 6 to 12 months, man. I just hope the game is still around 10 years from. Matter of fact, you know, there was an NFL player who said that this summer. He said, I am fearful. I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of, I am fearful that 15, 20 years from now, there will be no such thing as the NFL. And he might be right because they dealing with a lot of public relations issues. Man, yeah. So anyway, I saw a movie, speaking of the N-word, I saw a movie that's in limited release right now. It's called 12 Years a Slave. I'm warning you, I'm warning you, I'm warning you. If you have not seen that movie, and you particularly, if you are African-American and you have not seen that movie, brace yourself to see that movie. That movie is powerful. I mean, that's the movie that left me in my seat like 20 minutes after the movie was over. That's how deep that movie was, at least for me. And a lot of the other people I talked to, that movie, if you saw the miniseries from the late 70s called Roots, then 12 Years a Slave is like Roots on steroids. That would be my best description of it. Very graphic in terms of like the brutality scenes. Very graphic. Very graphic. Yeah, it ain't for the faint-hearted. That's all I'm going to say. I ain't going to get in more detail than that. Right now, I'm going to take an intermission break, but when I get back, I'm going to introduce my two guests, and we are going to get this conversation started. So, don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. I will be right back.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help him and help him and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people. And he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
To know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, "You got a talent for this rollerblading thing." And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, "Yes, I love to rollerblade." I said, "Well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading." I said, "Your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex?" And she was like, "Oh my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses?" I was like, "Is that a trick question?"
Please visit www.modeone.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at modeone.net. That's modeone.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives.
Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. And right now, I am going to introduce One of my two guests is the co-creator of, I hope I pronounced this right, the Somatica Method, a relational and experiential body-based therapy approach to sex coaching and relationship therapy. She received a master's MA in human sexuality studies from San Francisco State University and has conducted research that centered on adolescent sexuality development and the social roles that girls and boys learn and continue to play throughout their lives. She is an assistant professor at the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, where she trains professionals in somatic sexology. My other guest for the evening is also the co-creator of the Somatica Method, and she is a clinical sexologist and a professor at the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, where she trains professionals in somatic sexology. My guest has devoted the last 18 years to counseling and empowering couples, women, men, and groups. She graduated with a PhD and a Doctor of Human Sexuality degree from the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco. She also has a graduate degree in clinical social work, MSW, and a bachelor's degree in psychology and educational counseling. So, listeners, on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio Network and Upfront and Straightforward, I want you listeners to give it up for my guest tonight, Miss Celeste Hirschman and Dr. Danielle Harrell. Welcome, ladies. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be on the show. I love the round of applause. That was awesome.
Who is that who just said, I'm glad to be on the show?
Celeste.
See, now, I'm not going to go into any detail, listeners, but let's just say one of these two actually had some nitpicky criticisms about my show that I wasn't supposed to read, but I was able to read it, but that's a long story. So I'm glad she's on the show now, and we got our exchange of straightforward honesty, which you know I'm about, you know, because she didn't even back down. She was like, yeah, I said it, and come on with it. And I came on with it, then I said something, and she said something. So anyway, they're both on the show. I'm happy to have them. Now, they are the co-authors of a book with one of the catchiest titles I've heard. It's called Cock. You heard me at my intro at the beginning. It's called Cock. Cockfidence. There's nothing I love to hear a woman say than the word cock. So I want you two to just say the title of your book for me.
Yes, we named our book Cockfidence.
Okay, I heard one voice, and now I want to hear the second voice say the title of the book.
Oh, yeah, we just need to come to three for us to say together, you know.
See, I already know this is going to be a challenging interview, because number one, I can't tell who's who half the time. I don't know who, if I'm talking to Celeste or if I'm talking to Danielle. Well, Danielle, I'll start with you. What series of events in your life led you to the career you have right now?
Oh, I think, you know, I grew up in a very, you know, regular upbringing. I'm Israeli, by the way.
Okay.
And I am, you know, I moved to the U.S. and I kind of started to explore my own sexuality. I came from, as you saw, as you read in my bio, from a place, from clinical social work and doing therapy, but I definitely wanted something different. And when I started to explore my own sexuality, that led me to the whole process of, you know, getting my PhD in human sexuality. I went to a very experiential school, and that's where I met Celeste, and in one of the classes, and we really jived in the same, we had the same style of looking at therapy and sexuality, and while we're very different, we really work well together, and here we are, developing our own method, and really moving in the field of sexuality.
Okay, now let me ask you, I always hear people say, I've heard different guests on this very show say they explored their sexuality. What did you learn that was eyebrow-raising for yourself about your own sexuality?
Sex is awesome. That's what I learned about sex. Sex is awesome, and it's also very much, not only it's awesome, it's really, you know, like that's the source of me connected to my power as a woman, to my creativity. That's really, I say to people, you know, like my pussy is like my oracle.
Ooh, so that's sexy. You're going to have to say that again.
Right. Yeah, what I'm passionate about, I didn't do things that don't get me wet and excited.
Now, what's like your oracle again?
My pussy is my oracle.
Ooh, that's sick. Now, one thing you ladies are going to have to get used to, the title of my third book is actually called Ooh, Say It Again. And that's kind of like my signature phrase is
right.
Say it. So anytime I hear something that's out of the ordinary, kinky, arousing, flattering, I'll expect me to say, ooh, say it again. Now, Celeste, I'm going to ask you essentially the same question. What series of events happened in your life that led you to say, I want to pursue a career as a sexual advisor, sexual therapist?
Well, I think I had a very sort of opposite upbringing as Danielle. I had hippie parents in San Francisco, so I had a much more open and relaxed upbringing that was all about, you know, freedom and people doing what they want and very counterculture. And I think in a lot of ways that created a situation where I didn't have a lot of shame, which I think is sort of the dampening down of sexuality. And I also had a really strong sex drive as a young person, and I think maybe in some ways even more like a guy, you know. And so I was somebody who pursued her sexuality, you know, didn't wait like quietly in a corner for somebody to come and approach me or for something to happen. I was definitely like out there with who I was as a sexual person, and I think that created a situation where people felt comfortable. You know, they felt scared of me in some ways, and other people felt comfortable like, oh, this is somebody who I can talk to, who's not going to judge me, who's open about sexuality. And so it sort of like started at a young age. I felt like, oh, this is something that I'm good at, I know stuff about, I feel really unashamed of, and I can help people around it. And, you know, it was a long and winding road, I think, as most people's lives are, but I eventually ended up doing some of my own exploration around sexuality, getting my master's degree in human sexuality studies, and, as Danielle said, ultimately meeting her in the Sexological Bodywork Certification Training, which we taught for 5 years, and now we're teaching our own training of our method, which is the Somatica method, which is about sort of breaking down the nuts and bolts of sex and intimacy and helping people learn them piece by piece, because we don't have good places to learn that in our culture. So that was my pathway.
Okay, now, you know, I got to ask you, since Danielle said her pussy is her oracle. What about your pussy? Anything interesting about it?
Well, I think Danielle and I are in agreement. We're in agreement about that. You know, and it's not just like around sex. It's like, do I want to eat an apple or a pear right now? It's like my pussy tells me the answer to that question. Because, you know, our pussy and our sexual energy is our life force energy. And when we follow that, we feel more alive.
damn, listeners, did you hear that? She was like, okay, I'm at the restaurant. I don't know if I want pizza or a salad. Pussy, what do you think? Oh, okay. How good.
Which one makes me tingle? Which one makes me tingle?
Woo, now that's funny. Now, you know, have you ever, you get any of you two for me with a guy named Daniel Bergner? He wrote a book, I want to say it was on the New York Times bestseller list. He's been a guest on this show this past summer, called What Women Want. And his research, well, he didn't so much conduct research himself. He did to a degree, but he mainly kind of tagged along women like yourself. A lot of female sexologists, sex therapists. Anyway, what made me think of his book, and, you know, talking about pussy, is they had this one test called the wet-o-meter, where they showed women different photographic images and videographic images, and they gauged reactions. Yeah, I know what made me think, because when you said your pussy tingle. Here's what was interesting. This shows how you women are so interesting, and this kind of feeds into men and their whole attitude of why women don't like nice guys, why do they prefer jerks? When they show the women photographs of guys who look kind of clean-cut, you know, well-mannered, as well as video images, the women would have nothing but compliments to say about those guys, but the wet-o-meter was blank. Then when they show them photos and videos of guys who are more rough around the edges, you know, more edgy, kind of the type of guys that a lot of men and women would say, oh, that guy's probably a jerk, he's an asshole. The women would criticize those guys, but their pussy would be tingling. Their pussy, they would, you know, it's like beep, 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 beep. So I found that very, very interesting. Now, how did you two, okay, you mentioned that you two shared a class.
Well, and I have to say something about that because what...
Okay,
what
go ahead.
We say in confidence, what we say in confidence is women want nice guys who fuck like assholes.
Fuck like assholes.
Or fuck like jerks. But they will choose jerks. They will choose jerks over nice guys because they want to get fucked like that. You know what I mean? But I don't think that's actually, they don't actually want the jerk, but they do want that sex.
Well, I say that all the time on this very show. I say, women intellectually might say to themselves, yeah, I want a, you know, well-mannered, accommodating, pleasant, nice guy. But since you were talking about, like, your pussy helping you choose food, I always lightheartedly, well, not so much, like, kind of half lightheartedly, half seriously say that women listen to their pussies, and their pussies say to them, I want that guy that's going to fuck the shit out of me.
And you
he
know,
could
I
have all these on the outside, might look like he has all these flaws and issues. And matter of fact, when I was in Vegas, quick story, last year, I had a woman who was assistant. And she's Caucasian, but she loves black men. But she was telling me, she said, I don't really like the, like, clean-cut, college-educated type black man. I said, really? She said, well, Alan, you're a little different. You're college educated, but you got a nasty ass mouth. But she said, on average, they turn me off. But she said, like, when I'm around more of the, like, the street thuggish type, gangster type, you know, basically that gangster rapper type brother, she said, oh, shit, my pussy gets dripping wet. Because I just visualize them just fucking the shit out of me, like pulling my hair and slapping my ass and... She said, I just don't visualize the more clean-cut type guys doing that. And I found that an interesting comment because, you know, I'm sure there's probably some gangster thuggish types that can't fuck, and there's probably some clean-cut guys that can fuck, but her image was that the more thuggish types were going to make her come multiple times and really give it a good dick. So now let me ask you, you two shared the same class. What made you two bond to the point where you became business partners? Celeste, I'll ask you.
You know, at first we were just sort of, we just said, let's have lunch and talk about maybe doing a workshop together. And then we sat down and we planned our first men's, now we call it the Cockfidence Workshop for men on how to become an extraordinary lover. And we taught the first workshop, and I feel like it was just this amazing, like, coming home, like, wow, this is what we've been meant to do in the world. And from there, we started developing our own method of coaching, but it was like, it was that moment in time of really realizing, like, this isn't something we have to work to do. This is something that's in our blood. And we both just had so many of the same ideas and feelings about it. It seemed obvious that we would want to co-create something together because there's just more power. I feel like her and I together create something that's exponentially more powerful than we could as just single people by ourselves doing the work on our own.
So in your, like, kind of free, relaxed discussions, I got to ask you, who of the two of you tends to talk about cock the most?
Ooh, you know, it's funny, Ellen. Well, it's kind of like, I almost feel like the way that you're asking the question, like, sort of leads the discussion in a way that is like, let's just say the words cock and pussy and fuck me in the ass and bang it out, you know? And in a way, like, I can say all of those words, but it sort of doesn't, it doesn't feel very, like, it doesn't feel very deep, and it doesn't bring out the part.
We're going to get, I got some questions lined up for you guys.
Okay, let's do it. Can we do it?
Explore your whole book. But see, you got to understand also, now, I won't lie, even though I like a provocative type of conversation, even more so, I play to my listeners. And see, my listeners, they don't like, they don't tune in my show to listen to PG-13 rated interviews and discussions. I mean, they like to be enlightened, informed, and entertained, but they like the spicy back and forth. So, yeah, I do tend to punch the words like the fucking and the cock and the pussy, because that's what I get most of my email feedback. Like, oh, that was a juicy interview, Alan, last night when you had the woman talking about this and fucking. And so, yeah, that's me. That's my MO. Now, Danielle, let me ask you, what led you to come up with the concept of this particular book, Cockfidence?
Can I ask you a technical question for a second?
Go ahead.
Are you muting us when we are, just to know, because sometimes I feel like I'm talking to myself.
No, not yet. I do. Actually, it's funny you would ask that. If I am, usually if I am, have either two guests on the line at the same time or two call-in listeners on the, I will at least half the time mute one while the other one is talking. But up to this point, I have not done that as of yet, so I don't know why. You got that impression.
I was calling your name a few times, and I didn't hear you back, so I wondered what happened.
I
have a comment. It's very relevant to your question, and this is about, you know, you talked about, like, men, clean-cut men versus, you know, like, more like those rough asshole guys. And I think, you know, what we wanted to embody in Cockfidence is really the combination of, like, how to teach nice guys to fuck like assholes and really bring this into the bedroom, because women do want to marry or be in relationship with people, that guys that respect them and can share, you know, like, a lot of different things with them, and not only just, like, you know, like, don't care about them, but they do want to have the excitement that, you know, like, the assholes bring into the bedroom. So when we call the book Cockfidence, we really wanting it to be kind of like juicy, but at the same time bring this feeling of confidence that's come through embodying your own sexuality, you know? So
mm-hmm. Now, who came, was there one of you two who came up with that term before the other, or you kind of almost simultaneously came up with that term together? Cockfidence.
I can't even remember now. I think we were just playing around with different words and different titles, and that one came out.
Mm-hmm. We give birth to stuff together.
You said what? What did
we
you say, Daniel? I'm sorry.
Stuff together. It's like, you know, a baby is born and you ask, like, whose baby it is.
Okay. Now, what exactly is an experiential body-based approach? What does that really mean? Danielle.
Well, it means that.
Okay, that's the last talk. Go ahead, Celeste. Either one.
Oh, it means that when we work with our clients, we don't just sit here and talk about, you know, what to do in the bedroom, but we actually, if we have a couple in here, we'll lead them through experiences of touch or the way that they look at each other and sort of give them feedback and help and demonstrate. And so it's not, it's a hands-on approach in that, you know, it's not just like, okay, we're going to tell you some things and then go home and do it as homework, but a lot of those experiences happen in our office so we can help things transform in the moment. We find that people get a lot faster and more effective transformation when there's the help of us kind of like saying, oh, okay, well, you're doing this, but maybe if you did it this way, it would be a little better. And we're really good at seeing that and giving feedback in a way that people can hear and learn from. So it's in the moment, in the office, practice.
Danielle, you were talking about the whole, you know, nice guys, I guess, being perceived as being boring in bed. What are some aspects of a man's behavior that will cause a woman, A, if she's had sex with him at least two or three times, to become bored with him, or if she hasn't had sex with him, to perceive him as being a boring lay?
I think mostly being tentative and not confident. That would probably be the main thing that women will kind of get kind of like, ugh, what's that all about?
Mm-hmm. So tentative in his demeanor and a lack of confidence. Yeah, I've been hearing for years from different people, and particularly women, that confidence tends to be the number one non-physical attribute that gets a woman's pussy wet. I take it both of you would say resoundingly that that's true.
Yes, definitely. But
like,
I think also just creativity, you know, just like not just going right for the goal, but actually like taking time and warming things up and, you know, bringing in different energies and different kinds of experience. I think creativity also is something that's very exciting to women. And when men are just going right for like, okay, let's just do the, okay, I'm going to kiss for a little while, then I'm going to tweak your nipples, then I'm going to lick your pussy for 3 minutes, then I'm going to stick it in, like that's really boring.
Boring, yeah.
So you got to be a creative sexual partner. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Just too by the book, it's boring.
Yeah,
totally,
and kind of
boring.
Like passionate, you know. And so when you kind of, you know, when you see someone who is listening to a woman's body and not just like having their own agenda, so they're passionate but they're also listening, and they see that she's like moving to one area and they like follow it, you know, and then they. You know, there's something about the whole, like, nonverbal following connection that includes not only, okay, I came with all those tricks that I read in the book, and I heard that women getting orgasms from this and this, so that's what I'm going to do. You know, like, when someone is really in their body, that makes a man very sexy and knows how to follow his body and hers. Yeah,
what was interesting in reading your book is, I don't know if any one of you two are familiar with any of my four books, but you guys say a lot of things that's very similar to things I say in my books. Now, some things, of course, are totally in a totally different and a whole different element altogether, but a lot of things, particularly as it relates to interpersonal communication between the genders, is very similar to a lot of things I encourage and express. So, Celeste, tell me generally, what are the 9 qualities of an extraordinary lover?
Now I feel like I'm like, I'm now feel like I'm in a school, I'm like a test for school, and I have to be like, oh my God, what are the 9 qualities of an extraordinary lover off the top of my head? But yes, I can tell you what they are. They are presence, acceptance, confidence, which we've talked a lot about, generosity, passion, empathy, curiosity, spontaneity, which is a combination of creativity and flexibility, which we already started talking about a little bit, and finally, sensuality.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get into each of those in a little more detail. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments as the conversation goes on. You can call in to 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. Before I get into the specific, get some specific feedback from my two guests on each of those nine qualities, I'm going to take another intermission break. But when I get back, if you call in, I'll take your phone call, and I'll be asking these two young ladies some very detailed questions about the contents of their book. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Mode One.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex is deep.
This is Nikki True, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Nikki Ransom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, thank you, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Alan.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
What's going on, fellas?
Thanks for tuning in. It's nice to see you all again, so.
If you found this page, I'm guessing at least on some level you'd like more success.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog with lots of adventures and tips, it's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff, because it's awesome! And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls. If you're in London.
This is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher, and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from.
Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my sister.
Okay. Yeah, well, I will see you.
You will?
Soon. Ryan.
Ryan. We do.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting there. It's a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the streets. You know, chat girls on the street. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man. Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. I just want a little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the boot camp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and...
Stop being a fucking... Just... What? I mean, come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to my interview and discussion with Dr. Danielle Harrell and Ms. Celeste Hirschman about their book, Cockfident, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of both romance and self-help for dating and relationships. In my chat room, I got Aaron 2213, got Christian Davis, Diva 362636, Frankie, my main man, a number of guests. I got my younger cousin, Hypestyle, I haven't seen him in a while, in my chat room. I got Jazz Kaz listening from Singapore. I got international fans and listeners. That's right, not just domestic. And I got somebody who have the username Stop Whining and Start Winning. And if you're just tuning in, my special guests for the evening are two highly respected sex therapists and their co-book authors of a book entitled Cockfidence. Not confidence, but cockfidence. That's right, and it's designed to help men, in a nutshell, up their game, up their sexual game with women, you know, get women's pussies wet more frequently to a higher degree for a longer period of time, you know, make them want that dick, want that cock. And so just before I went to the break, Celeste told me that the nine qualities, the nine attributes that contribute to a man becoming an extraordinary lover are presence, acceptance, confidence, generosity, passion, empathy, curiosity, spontaneity, which includes creativity plus flexibility, and finally, sensuality. So, Celeste, I'm going to start off asking you, give us a nutshell of how learning more about presence will help a man improve his sexual game.
I think presence is like, if you're not there, nothing else can happen, you know? So, and for a lot of people, they think of presence as just sort of like being there in their head, but we really teach people to be there in their bodies, like to feel their chest and their stomach and their cock, and to actually be present with their own arousal and interest and excitement, even just when they're talking to somebody, but not let that spill all over the other person. Kind of hold it. That's the confident place where you're just holding it and you're like, I'm not pulling this back from you and I'm not spilling it all over you. I'm going to be present with my own desire and be present with you at the same time and feel the energy between us. And that's when the circuit starts happening and you start like building together with flirtation and, you know, sometimes there's a little touch that happens when you're first flirting with somebody and you start kind of like building on that. And then, you know, you can do it throughout your life and relationship with somebody. If you have long-term relationships, staying present and coming back to that presence anytime you're touching or kissing or looking at or making love to somebody or fucking them or whatever you're doing,
or doing
that you have that, that you're really there with them, you know.
Now what's this I read
that's
about
presence.
Erotic power? What's that about, erotic power?
Danielle, you want to get that one?
I just got the book out, you know.
You're supposed to go in your head, Danielle.
You know? That's not exactly how we teach them, you know, and we do it. We're very interactive. But, you know, if people want to follow, we have the blog on Cockfidence on our www.celestanddanielle.com, or people can just go and see some excerpts from the book and be able to see what we're talking about, too. So just, you know, to help your listeners. So you asked if what it means to feel erotic power. It is.
Yeah, I saw erotic power in the chapter on presence. And the second thing I noticed, you guys emphasize a lot about breathing exercises, breathing techniques. So, Danielle, tell me something about how important is breathing as it relates to a man's eroticism.
So, you know, breath is the maybe like the most common thing that people do in all embodied practices, from running to yoga to meditation to, you know, like everything, including sex. So breath is a life force. You know, this is the first thing that changes from being in the womb when we actually don't breathe into coming out, which we start breathing. So breath is a way to kind of like be in our bodies and connect with our bodies. So when we teach men to kind of breathe consciously, it helps them connect with different parts of their body and connect with the cock and start creating this, like, be in the body. People, you know, especially with porn, people are being so disconnected from their body, and just this whole erotic thing happens in the head, and that's so hot, and it happens so fast, so people kind of bypass the whole, especially men, bypass this whole arousal that happens in the body. And they kind of, it makes them reach just a small fraction of their ability to be in their body and enjoy sex. So when men are in their body, they can feel more, they can be present, and they can connect. And breath is one tool, very good one, to be there.
Okay. Celeste, give me the gist of acceptance.
Yeah, I think a lot of times what people think that relationship is all about is compromise. Like, well, if I really want to be in this relationship, I have to let go of this part of myself and never do that again and forget about ever wanting that again. And I think our as a society, our relationships are completely over-compromised, and people are bored and frustrated and not being true to who they are. So I'm much more interested in people especially not compromising the things that are important to them and learning how to accept each other, even if they're scary things, right? So sometimes you hear your partner's desire, whatever it is, and you think, oh, my God, I can't give them that. Make it go away. Tell them it's bad. You know, tell them they have to compromise that. And I actually really, Danielle and I work with people a lot to help them, you know, say, okay, that scares me, but that's my partner, that's my lover, and loving them means loving that desire or loving that, you know, need to go out and do the thing that they want to do. And I mean, it could be anything from, you know, a motorcycle, like driving a motorcycle, to particular kinds of sex. And it doesn't mean you have to provide it, but at least say, oh, that's a beautiful desire. That's acceptance. It's like accepting all of the different parts of your partner, even the ones that scare you or frustrate you or, you know, you don't exactly want them to be that way. to move from compromise to acceptance, I think, is really helps the sustainability of relationship.
See, now, it's funny. This was one of those points in your book where I was mentioning earlier that, because, see, I say that in one of my books. I don't believe in the whole compromising bullshit. To a degree, maybe, but overall, like, I always joke with women. I say, like, I love chicken wings. And if I was to meet a woman, say, I don't know, she was a vegetarian, and she said, oh, Ellen, I need you to give up those chicken wings to, you know, for our relationship to work, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. I am not giving up my chicken wings. No, no, no. Either you accept me, as using your word, accept me as a chicken wing lover, or we don't deal with each other. So I agree with that. I think too many men and women go overboard with this desire to compromise. Now, Danielle, how important is it for a man to listen to his emotions?
I think it's extremely important. Unfortunately, many men don't know how to do it because culturally men are not being encouraged to even know what their emotions are and definitely not listen to them. And many men kind of like really have not a lot of clue of what happens in their emotional field. But the same way, and many men use sex as a vehicle to get into connection and emotions. The same way that women want to go, wow, I want to talk to be, to feel connected and then I want to have sex with you. Men feel like, yeah, I want to have sex so I can feel connected to you, because sex is the stuff that's allowed to men, for men to do, and feelings is not allowed. So for men to get in touch with their emotions will just help them be much more clear about what they want, what they need, be able to express it much better, will be able to connect with women more, you know, like, be more articulate about it. So I think it's essential. You know, we have emotions, and emotions is
an important part
of our guidance in life, you know?
Well, this is where I have to challenge you a bit and play a little bit of devil's advocate, because this is one of the things I talk about on this show on different interviews and discussions I've had. One of the differences I noticed between men and women, and I'm generalizing a bit with both, is that women, if they get some good dick, they will fall in love with that guy who's giving them good dick. A lot of it, I believe, I always say, is because of what I call the oxytocin effect. But women, they always tend to throw good sex and love kind of in the same mixing bowl, and they almost are synonyms. Whereas for men, and again, I'm doing a little loose generalization, but with men, like, I'll speak for myself. I can fuck a woman 200 times and never, ever, ever feel like I'm falling in love with that woman, ever. On the flip side, I can meet another woman, and I might not even have had sex with her yet, and I can feel like I'm falling in love with her. So if the suggestion that listen to emotions means that emotions should always be involved with sex, I don't know if that's what you're saying, but if indeed it is, then I would have to disagree with that, because most men I know feel like me. They're like, man, I don't mix emotions with, you know, fucking, unless it's my wife or something like that. But as far as just a woman, say I met at a nightclub, she got some nice ass and big tits, I ain't trying to fall in love with her. I'm trying to fuck the shit out of her, make her come, allow myself to come, and as much as possible, keep emotions out of it. So
I think you're confusing emotions with love, because emotions and love are different things. Love is just one emotion you could experience, but in a sexual experience with a woman, you could also experience power, which sounds like one of the things that you like to experience, or agency or freedom or excitement. So I think most people go to sex to feel something, and it doesn't have to be love, but women are told that if they don't love the person that they're with, then they're sluts, and so women justify sex with love. I don't think they fall in love with everybody who sticks their dick inside of them, but they think they have to so that they can just enjoy the sex. So I think that's more of cultural learning that creates that situation than oxytocin. And I think men do go to sex for emotion, but not necessarily love. And I think actually women go to sex for emotion and not necessarily love, but they feel compelled to call it love so that they can feel like they're not slutty.
Mm-hmm. I like that feedback. I will go sign with that.
All right.
Now, what about a man letting go of the idea of being perfect?
Yeah. I feel like we all need to let go of the idea of being perfect because it doesn't exist in the world, and what we actually are is human. And, you know, when we're gentle on ourselves and on each other and we don't feel like we have to be perfect and fix everything, men are such fixers. They feel like, oh, there's a problem. How can I fix it? You know, and do that at work. But when it comes to emotions, there's nothing to be fixed. You just need to be there and be present and to feel with somebody. And so I think one of the ways men try to be perfect is, like, everything has to be fixed. And letting go of this sense of, like, to be perfect and instead just saying, okay, I'm human. I make mistakes. When somebody criticizes me, I can take some feedback, you know, and move on and, you know, maybe give somebody feedback, but in a gentle a way as possible, instead of holding everybody to this, like, if you're not perfect, you're not lovable, or holding ourselves to that feeling, if I'm not perfect, I'm not lovable. Letting go of that creates an opportunity for real intimacy.
Okay. And one more final thing under the category of acceptance. I happen to see some. I don't think I read it in detail, but one of the things I deal with in my books is helping men overcome their fear of rejection, and I saw that mentioned in that chapter. How do you, Celeste and Danielle, how do you go about helping men overcome their fear of rejection?
Okay, I'll take it. you know, I have to say I have so much compassion for men. I am actually bisexual myself, and I have dated women. And I think women are taught to wait and hang back until somebody goes and initiates sex or a touch or, you know, flirtation with them. And I think it's really hard. What, you know, men have to deal with a lot more rejection than women generally do because they're taught that they have to be the ones who initiate, and they have to be the ones who initiate, not just the first time, but like over and over and over again as expected. And so learning how to deal with rejection and say, okay, well, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean it's a rejection of me. They just might not want what I'm offering right now in this moment. Or I'm not exactly everybody's flavor, but I'm going to be some people's flavor. And if I just keep trying, I'm going to find some, you know, meeting place. And sometimes I even just practice rejection with men. Like, they practice asking me out. I tell them no, and they realize that they can survive that experience with their dignity intact. So, you know, it's both, like, knowing that it's part and parcel of being a man in our culture and also that it's survivable, that they can start going out and practicing with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Again, that relates to a lot of stuff. Because, see, here's my simple thing. I always tell men, rejection is win-win. I love rejection. And to some of my followers and supporters and men in general, that sounds crazy. But I really do. And here's why. Because I always say it's only two people who are going to reject you. Those women that are genuinely not interested in you, or those women who want to give you the impression that they're not interested in you. For group number one, if a woman's not interested in dating me or having sex with me, I want her to reject me, because that prevents me from investing any time, any money, and, as you mentioned, emotion in a woman that's going to ultimately end up wasting my time, you know, that's not going to, you know, have sex with me. So I want her to reject me. And the women who are in group number two, the women who really deep down are attracted to me, but they're trying to give me the impression in that, I call those in my book pretenders. At some point later on, they're going to try to connect with you, and then you'll have the upper hand. So, yeah, I tell men, and if you're a new male listener, listen to my show, never, ever, ever be afraid of rejection. Rejection can actually be your friend. The women I tell men to watch out for is what I call the time waster, and that's the woman who will, for a few days or a few weeks or even a few months, give you the misleading impression that she has some degree of romantic and or sexual interest in you, but really she's just looking to be flattered by you, entertained by you, wine and dine by you, but she ain't gonna never give you the pussy. And so, yeah, those are the women you want to look at, if, for lack of a better word, as the enemy, not the rejectors. Always give respect to the rejectors. Now, moving on to the attribute that's most similar to the title of your book, and that would be confidence, since unless you seem to want to be the one to give most of the feedback, I'll direct that at you. Give me the gist of your chapter on confidence.
Well, I feel like confidence has a lot to do with knowing that your desires, and we're talking about, you know, in terms of sexuality and relationship, knowing that your desires are okay, kind of accepting your own desires as okay, regardless of whether or not somebody's going to receive them, and knowing that you've got what somebody wants when they are ready to receive it. So you have a sense of, like, competence, you know, like you know how to touch, you know how to look at somebody, you know how to bring your passionate energy, you know how to move their bodies in lots of different positions. You know how to tell them hot fantasies in their ear. You know kind of how to speak to them sexually. So there's a whole set of things, of tools that you can have in your confident or your confident toolbox to help you be the most amazing lover. And when you feel like you have those tools, then you kind of walk around in the world like, yeah, reject me or not, but if we do hook this thing up, then it's going to be really good. I've got it. I've got it for you. When you're ready, I've got it for you, you know? And when you walk around with that feeling in your body, I think other people can sense it, and they sort of want to, they get attracted, they're magnetized to it.
Yeah, I like, there's a line, a guy, a former guest on my show, his name is Anthony Clark. He had one of the best phrases I heard related to having confidence with women, particularly sexual confidence. He said, Alan, before I met Melanie, who's his now wife, he said, whenever I went to the club, I went to the club with the attitude that I was selling dick and not buying pussy. And I was like, ooh, I like that. I'm going to steal it. But, yeah, that's I like that. Now, you say in that chapter that it's important for men to connect with other men. Why?
Well, I think that men are, you know, when men are really afraid of other men or they only want to be around women, then they don't have that support of, you know, just somebody who they can bond with around what it is to be a man. And having that sort of, that familial or brotherly feeling of like, yeah, he's got my back, I can tell him what's going on for me, or we can just hang out and kind of feel good together without any pressure. That it just, it's part of the confidence, you know, it's like, yeah, I've got, you know, women love me, men got my back, and it's just it's fortifying.
And what does it mean to master your sexual function?
Well, I think a lot of men out there are dealing with erectile dysfunction or early ejaculation or inability to ejaculate. And, you know, on the one hand, it's to get to know your body really well and to feel more connected to your sexuality. And, you know, if you have trouble controlling your ejaculation, learn how to slow it down and take your time and, you know, get used to those sensations of high arousal. If you're having erectile dysfunction, to go easy on yourself, not worry so much about performance, come from your own erotic energy and not just try to make somebody else feel good or follow your impulses. So depending on what their dysfunction is, there's different ways of mastering it. But ultimately, also, it's just knowing that people's bodies have different levels of functioning and that you can still be an amazing lover even if you can't get an erection all the time or even if you come quickly. So when I work with men around mastering their sexual function, when our whole, you know, when our team works with men around mastering sexual function, a lot of it has to do with the combination of both helping them get more in touch with their body and helping them accept their body. You're going to do what it's going to do sometimes, and you can't always control it, but you can always be an amazing lover.
And final question, and still in the category of confidence, what does it mean for a man to expand his masturbation practice?
Sure. So I'm back, Danielle. So, that means, you know, men usually kind of, sorry, I had to leave for a few minutes.
Okay.
What it means is, again, most guys learn to masturbate very quickly and, you know, like, no one's going to notice, no one's going to find me, I'm going to do it quickly and come quickly. And that kind of impacts the way that they are performing later. So expanding and the best way to learn about sex is through masturbation. It's through your own body. Like, learning your own body is really important. As important as learning, or even more important, as learning your partner's body. But because you need to expand who you are and be able to, you know, like, learn different ways of stimulating yourself and feeling more. And the way that guys learn to do through porn is very much, again, like, there's the stimulation on the screen and there's the cock. And there's, like, a little bit of disconnect. It kind of jumps through the body. And when we teach men to have, like, expanded masturbation practice, we actually teach them how to incorporate their body in the experience and respond to touch and not only to the stimulation, the psychological one, the image one.
Hmm. Okay, so let's tell me about why is it important to know about generosity? How can that help a man's game?
Well, whenever I talk about generosity, I actually always start, interestingly enough, with boundaries. So if people don't feel like they can say no, they actually can't say yes from a place of generosity. So men need to know that they can't give their partner everything that they want and they can't say yes to everything or they won't actually be themselves and they'll start being resentful and frustrated and they won't be able to do anything generously. But if they're giving what they want to give, like I want to offer you this pleasure or I want to offer you this present or I want to take you to this place or this touch or, you know, any of those kinds of things, if they're doing it because it feels good to them to do it, not to try to get something back or to make her okay or any of those kinds of things, then an actual flow of generosity starts to go and it'll come back to you, you know. But if you just feel like, oops, I'm obligated to do everything, I just have to do it, then everything's going to feel like a chore and nothing will come generously. And for sex to be great and for intimacy to be great, there has to be a lot of generosity, and especially in long-term relationships, you know, learning how to not just beat each other up when things get rough. It takes a lot of generosity to say, okay, I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to just get mad. I'm not just going to blast you. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. I'm going to give something back to you of myself.
Now, what type of tests do women, I can relate to this because I talk about this in my book, but I want to know from you, what kind of tests do you feel women give men that they need to pass? Danielle or Celeste?
I feel like women, the big overall heading of the test that women give is if he loved me, he would know. And I don't blame women for this because it's really what we see in every movie and it's like we're bottle fed it from the moment that we're born, which is like I don't tell people what I want or what I need. If they don't know, that means they don't really love me. And so the tests usually have something to do with that. Like you're sitting there and you're waiting and you're expecting the person to do what you want them to do, and then they don't do it and you think, oh, God, that means he doesn't really love me or he doesn't really like me or he doesn't want me. I knew it. I knew it all along, you know, instead of just being like, you know, I have to teach people how to love me. And so we really help women share what they want from, you know, from men. And, you know, for men to say, like, sweetheart, I love you so much, but I'm not a mind reader, you know. If you don't tell me, I can understand that you're frustrated because I'm not doing what you want, but I can't know that until you really share it with me. So I think a lot of the testing has to do with that, and it's, you know, it's cultural learning that we have to overcome in order to have a better relationship because everybody needs to be loved in a different way.
Okay, now you mentioned love and the idea of long-term monogamous relationships, but what if a guy honestly was just looking to have, like, say, a friends with benefits relationship or a string of weekend flings? Could
well,
he benefit from these principles as well? You said what?
I said I didn't say monogamous, you did. So long-term relationship doesn't mean monogamous necessarily. Definitely doesn't to me.
Oh, I agree with that.
I think there's a lot of different ways you can be that way, but I think all of these things apply to men who are dating, to men who are, you know, just wanting to have friends with benefits or just wanting to have sex, because ultimately you can have a lot of, you know, connection, emotion, intensity, and it doesn't mean you have to fall in love or get married or make babies. You can just be like, wow, that was an amazing experience, and my life is richer for it, you know, and it doesn't have to just be like,
I'm a man, I'm taking this from women, but I have something to offer you too. And if men are just like, yeah, I'm just going to stick my dick in it and move on, which I think no man actually really wants to do, he just might not want to be in long-term relationship. I think if a man took the approach of like, hey, I really want to experience the full intensity of this sexual experience, and then I want to say to this woman, that was amazing, you're great, and I'm not doing relationship right now, I have a lot of respect for that, you know, and I think women can and should do that as well. And I think all of the principles in this book apply for those kinds of experiences as well, because why not feel as much as possible in those experiences? You know, that doesn't mean that you have to sign up for forever.
Single people don't practice to be in relationship, you know. It's really, I think people need to be like, to live to the fullest, whether they're single or in long-term relationships. So
I see you both are fans of complete honesty, up what I call upfront, straightforward honesty. True?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I have two words that sum up my principles of upfront, straightforward honesty, and that's just simply called mode one. And as I go to my third and final intermission break, I want you two together on a 3-2-1 count to give me your most enthusiastic or your most seductive mode one. 3-2-1.
Mode one, baby.
I only heard one voice. Danielle, give me a mode one.
I'm way too rebellious for that.
You're never going to get Danielle to do something she doesn't want to do. Go, Danielle.
Oh, Lord. Okay, we'll be right back. Are you a single heterosexual male who has experienced more than your share of problems, disappointments, and frustrations in your interactions with women of interest? Then you need to contact Linda Gross. She's the author of The Caveman Formula, How to Master Winning Ways with Women. She will offer you consultation sessions that will seek to identify and eliminate all the flaws and weaknesses in your behavior. Contact Linda today at info@themensadvocate.com. That's info@themensadvocate.com. Mention Mode 1 and you'll get 15 minutes free in your consultation session. Don't hesitate. Contact her today.
I don't want to give you the wrong impression. I need love and affection. And I hope I'm not sounding too desperate. I need
read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront, Straightforward, and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
Do
you know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's
more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
We now return to my interview and discussion with Dr. Danielle Harrell and Ms. Celeste Hirschman about their book, Cockfident, on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to the final segment of tonight's episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on Blog Talk Radio in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. My guests are Dr. Danielle Harrell, who refused to say Mo 1 before the intermission break. So listeners, you know she on my shit list. And Celeste, who said it, but said it real quick. She didn't stretch out the O's. I give her a pass on that. But their book is called Cockfidence. Cockfidence. And they outline 9 attributes, qualities that men should incorporate in order to create better sexual chemistry with women. We've covered about 5 of those, which was presence, acceptance, confidence, generosity. No, actually, we've only covered 4. So now on the 5th one, passion. Celeste, why is passion important?
Yep. Oh, I mean, is it even a question? It's like that is the juice and the excitement of sex when you bring, and I mean, it's not just sex either. It's sort of the juice and excitement of life. It's like, what are you really going after? You know, that's what makes us feel alive. And so whether it's what are you going after in your life or what are you going after in sex, if you're not bringing that, you might as well just not bring anything at all.
Okay, let me ask you two.
And I don't think passion. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you two an interesting question, because I'll start with you, Celeste. Think about the last man you really enjoyed having sex with, whether it was for 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years. Would you say that last man who you consider to be an extraordinary lover incorporated all nine of these qualities?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. I mean, I kind of got to a point in my life where I wouldn't have it any other way.
And Danielle, I know it might be a silly question, but I'm going to throw it at you. The last man you really thoroughly enjoyed having sex with, he incorporated all nine of these attributes you endorse?
Yes. That's why I'm not moaning for you, darling. No moaning.
What did she say?
She basically said, you know, I'm only going to moan for you if you just seduce me first. So she didn't want to say your one mode or whatever it was because she didn't feel properly seduced.
Interesting. Okay, so in other words, I needed to get her pussy wet first before she would say moan.
Exactly.
Right on.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind, Danielle. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
man
likes the challenge. That's good.
Yeah, because trust me, I try to keep my modest demeanor on my show, but if I don't know how to do anything else in life, I know how to use my voice and my conversational skills to get a woman's pussy wet.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I think that is a really challenging thing to do. So I want to give you like kudos for that because I think when I teach men how to talk during sex, that's maybe one of the harder skills for a lot of men to learn.
Oh, trust me, I know.
To say things sincerely and sexually, and you know, with like that, you know, that kind of like come on over here feeling without sounding cheesy. I think it's a real. It's a real skill, you know, it's a beautiful skill, and it's really essential to a lot of women's arousal, you know, just like silent sex. It's hard for us to fully get our heads in the game with totally silent sex, you know, like we want to hear your voice, we want to hear how sexy we are to you, we want to hear fantasies whispered in our ears, we want to hear you moan also, not just moan ourselves, so I think a man's voice is a big part of seduction and arousal for women.
Oh.
And I want to add to this that mainly for two reasons. One, you kind of keep the connection going, and women don't feel like kind of lost. And women tend to get lost anyway because, you know, they didn't learn to be engaged with sex, so they start to think about laundry and other stuff. So when a man talks to them, it helps them stay focused on the sexual experience and helps them stay aroused.
Yeah, that's what my, I have four books, and my third book is called Ooh, Say It Again, Mastering the Fine Art of Verbal Seduction and Oral Sex, not O-R-A-L, but A-U-R-A-L. That's what two-thirds, three-fourths of that book is all about. And I work with clients. I actually teach men and women, too. I have some female clients, too, that I teach them how to use their voice to get a woman's pussy wet, keep her pussy wet. Because that was my kind of first claim to fame among my close friends and acquaintances starting with college, is that I was a master at talking dirty to women. I mean, if they had some kind of prize on my college campus for the man with the most talk dirty talent, I would have won it, like, hands down, because, yeah, that's just what I always got talked
well,
about.
I want to say something in my sexy, dirty voice. I want to say www.celestindanielle.com. Because I want your listeners to come check out our website and find out more about us. What do you think?
I'll work with you on that. Okay, we going to go with four more, and then before we wrap up, let's go to empathy. Why is it important for a man to emphasize empathy?
Well, I think there's two kinds of empathy that we teach about in the book. One of them is emotional empathy, and one of them is embodied empathy, like the empathy of feeling a woman's body and following and leading and getting into the flow of the sensation of actually not just feeling your own body, but really feeling the connection and being inside and connected with the other person's body, you know, literally and metaphorically. And then also empathizing with somebody's emotions, you know, even in short-term interactions, the more empathy that you can bring to another person and understand what they're passionate about and, you know, like what gets them excited and juicy in their lives and in bed and emotionally, the more that you kind of create a connection with the person that helps them to open and fully experience their sexuality to the highest level and their emotional connection, if that's part of what you want. But, you know, if you're not bringing that empathy, then you're not going to get the deep juiciness that is available during sex.
Now, you mentioned in that chapter about debating, reasoning, attacking, fixing. What is that about?
Well, most of the time when people bring up an issue in relationship, the response that men have is to do something about it, like, you know, talk them out of their feelings or, you know, hide or get defensive or, you know, get really logical instead of just going, oh, that's how that person feels. What if I just make some room? Like, doesn't mean that I'm a horrible person, doesn't mean that I did something wrong, and it also doesn't mean that I have to or can fix it. But I could just put myself in that person's shoes and go, wow, you know, if I felt that way about what was going on right now, that would suck. To just like let that person have their feelings and to not feel like you have to defend against them or fix them. I think it would revolutionize relationships if we could just do that one simple thing.
Okay. And why is it important for a man to be vulnerable but not weak?
Well, vulnerability is actually a way to get to feel with someone, you know, and that's a way to really be yourself with someone. And when maybe I'll explain the vulnerability versus weak a little bit. So weak means like, oh, this is me, this is my problems, you go and fix it for me. This is weak. When someone is complaining, you know, like constantly like not actually taking care of themselves, but try to make their partners take care of them, and that's not vulnerability. Vulnerability is a way of kind of really be honest with your deep feelings and not needing your partner to, not coming to them saying like, hey, now you fix it. It's more like, that's how I feel and, you know, I just need you to hear me.
And I think with, you know, with men who are in the dating world or just like in the friends with benefits world, even vulnerability has its place there. Because so many men, I think, are taught or feel like, you know, I just have to lie to a woman to get into her pussy. Instead of like, I'm going to be really real with who I am and what I want. And I think women really actually respect that. And that if you go into it in that situation, yeah, maybe you aren't going to have sex with every single woman that you want to have sex with, but you're going to have much better, hotter, more intense sexual experiences that don't have people at the end crying and leaving horrible voicemails and, you know, texting you what an asshole you are, because you vulnerably said, hey, this is what I really want here, you know, and this is what I'm willing to show up for, instead of saying like, yeah, baby, I'm going to give you whatever you want. You know, I feel like the vulnerability is actually taking the risk of being honest and seeing if who you are and what you want in that moment is acceptable.
So you said men should not lie to get in where?
I'm not just going to play your repeating games, babe.
Wow.
If you want to hear the word again, you say it.
You say it, Dallin. We're going to fuck with
that. You said it.
You two are funny. So I think you two love playing the role of the alpha female, huh?
I don't think it's a role. It's sort of like, you know, what we were born into.
And have you found men really found that appealing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, my God.
With no partners whatsoever, you know.
Really? So most of the men you've dealt with like the fact that you guys come across as alpha females.
Yeah, because they're alpha males. They want somebody who can fully meet them where they are and who are going to say no and, you know, be honest and be vulnerable and also expect them to do the same, to say yes when they want to say yes and no when they want to say no. It's only a beta male that needs a woman to do everything that he wants in order for him to feel good about himself.
Ooh, I don't. Well, I guess we're gonna have to agree to disagree with that. The way you put it,
I'm happy to disagree with you on that. That'll be one way in which I feel comfortable again disagreeing.
Yeah, I mean, I say this. We, you know, our experiences form our opinions, and one of the biggest complaints I hear from men. I just did a show about 2 or 3 weeks ago about this. Matter of fact, yeah, we had a show called. It was called Beta Males and the manipulative women who take advantage of them. I don't know any particularly brothers. I don't know any brother with balls and backbone that likes a woman that tries to just run shit and be a bossy bitch type. That's a major fucking turnoff. Yeah, so,
well, I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know if you're calling us bossy bitches, but that's not what I feel like at all. I feel like I fully meet people with honesty and integrity and a lot of love and support, and the men in my life feel supported by me and become the best people that they are. So I don't want to be distant or bitchy or mean to anybody, but I also don't want to just do what people say if it doesn't feel right to me. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about compromise versus acceptance. So, you know, I think the bitch label gets used anytime a woman is trying to assert her needs or feelings, and there's a really big difference between being, you know, awful to somebody and just being true to who you are. And I'm not awful to people.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Curiosity. How do you help men identify when a woman's horny?
Curiosity. Oh, well, I think there's lots of ways to know whether or not your partner is horny. One of them is just to track their cycle, because especially as we get a little bit older, our desire is cyclical. So, you know, knowing when we're ovulating and menstruating, even though that might give men the oof act. You know, I mean, I think they're good at saying, like, oh, she's PMSing, so she's bitchy. But if they were really smart, they'd say, oh, she's ovulating, so she's horny. You know, like, they could track it for that. I think also, you know, women do give more subtle signals than men generally do around their sexuality. So kind of tuning in and seeing, you know, what kind of look or what kind of posture or what eyes is a woman making at you that let you know that she's desirous or ready. And that's part of being empathetic and kind of feeling your body and being present as you're connecting with women. That gives men a much more likelihood of making passes at times when they're going to be more likely received and desired, kind of tuning into the other person and also kind of knowing something about their body if they're with them in the long term.
And women tend to be much more complimentary and kind of like give more compliments, be more soft, be more seductive when they are, you know, more horny around their cycle. So there are things that you can kind of track around that.
Now, you mentioned earlier about creativity, the importance of creativity plus flexibility. Elaborate a bit on that.
Yeah, so a lot of people talk about, oh, we want spontaneity. And when Danielle and I were writing the book, we were thinking, well, what is spontaneity anyway, you know? And we realized that it's actually the combination of two qualities. One of them is just the willingness to bring your true creative self into the experience and say, hey, this is what I want. Let's try this. Let's try something new. But often when people bring that, then if it's not received, they feel rejected and shut down. So that's why we added flexibility, because it's like, hey, I'm bringing this great thing. And if you want it, wonderful. And if you don't, let me bring something else and see if you want that. And then you can stay connected with the other person, and things can continue to just flow. So that's why you need them both together in order to have that feeling of flowing spontaneity.
And why is it important for men to practice dominant words and what's your definition of dominant words and dominant gestures?
I think that, you know, we talk in the chapter about women wanting sometimes some combination, most often, of romance, passion, and dominance. So, you know, dominance is just one of the attitudes that men can bring into experience. And I think a lot of times when we think of dominance, we think of meanness. But I don't think of meanness at all when I think of dominance. I think dominance is actually a very calm, can be stern, but very centered and grounded approach. And it's sort of like, you know, do this, you know, just sort of like taking charge with your words or taking charge with your body.
And maybe some people like to play on the mean edge, but I think most people just want to feel like they're taken on a journey. Most women want to feel that way. And so bringing that dominant energy of like, that's right, I'm going to take you on this journey with a lot of clarity and power. And it could be the way that you're grabbing the person or moving their body or even spanking them or telling them what to do. But you're not doing it with meanness. You're doing it with more like, you know, like let's really enjoy the experience of me taking charge and you feeling like you can just let go and be free in the experience of following along on that ride, you know, that roller coaster.
And why do a lot of women entertain rape fantasies?
Well, it's part of the feeling of wanting to be taken, right? Like, I don't think that women actually want to be raped in, like, a violent way or by a stranger or something like that, but I think women do want, they don't want to have the responsibility of saying, yeah, I want sex, because then they're called sluts by our society, and they also just want this feeling of, like, I want to be able to let go and not have to, you know, worry about what's going to happen to me. And so the fantasy of rape sort of gives them that experience. They actually want to be raped, but it is, can be very arousing. And some people just are very turned on by power and power differences. And so a lot of people will have rape fantasies when power is a big part of the turn on.
And finally, why? How much does a man's kissing skills contribute to his perception of being sensuous, his sensuality?
I feel like for so many women, go ahead.
I'm just thinking that this is the men's, you know, we just wrote a blog on it, but this is like the men's business card. You know, you just go in, you know how to kiss. It already, like, tells a woman so much about you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and women,
now,
so many women, like, kissing is essential, right? Like, if you don't kiss right, you are off the list. They're like, well, he was really cute, but he was a really bad kisser. It's like it really blocks our ability to get turned on.
Now, somebody asked me something in the chat room that I do find interesting, because this goes back to the spontaneity, and we were talking about dominant words, dominant gestures. Now, you basically are encouraging men to be dominant. Now, I know, I'll preface this by saying, I know I'm not in any type of romantic or sexual relationship with either one of you two, so it doesn't necessarily apply. But this person from my chat room said basically, when I was asking you to say mold one and one or two other things, you basically were very defiant. So what would you tell a man if he approached a woman he was interested in and he wanted to be dominant and she came across as very defiant? What should be his reaction? Should he just leave her alone?
Well, I feel like then he's gotten what I would call an unruly bottom, right? Like part of playing with power isn't always being like, oh, I'm going to dominate and you're just going to easily submit. Part of playing with power is also saying like, oh, what if I don't easily submit? You know, then what's going to happen? And I'm not talking about, I mean, when you do go into these kinds of experiences, you have to negotiate this to some degree, because if she's really saying, no, I don't want this, then it is rape. But if she's saying, no, I want you to dominate me, but I want to be able to fight back against it a little bit, and I want to play with that energy of like, no, I'm not going to do everything you say. What are you going to do about it? Then I think that can be a really fun part of power play.
Interesting. Okay, this will be my final question tonight. What does a man need to know that he may not know about women's hot spots, and particularly how to get the caress and massage the clitoris and penetrate the G-spot? What tips do you have for men?
Either okay, one. So I feel like the biggest tip is to again, listen to the woman's responsiveness in her body. I think there's so many different ways to touch a clitoris, you know, and there's sort of like the basic ways, like really basic things that I tell men is don't just use one finger, like use three fingers, and don't make them all pointy, make them flat, you know, so you can kind of get a lot of coverage across the clit, and you can go start out slow, nice circles, little side to side, and then slowly speed up. But at first you really want to do like light teasing to kind of get the clit excited, and that's like way off in the future. When you're first starting having sex, you want to get the whole body excited, because if you touch a woman's pussy too quickly, you're actually going to turn the clit off
rather than turn it off on. And I think men don't understand that because it's like, yeah, the sooner you're touching my cock, the happier I am. Not every man, but a lot of men. But for women, if you're touching her pussy too soon, it might actually have the opposite effect because she'll feel like, uh-oh, I'm already supposed to be turned on. I have to hurry up. This is women's version of performance anxiety. So teasing the pussy as part of the whole package of touching and kissing and caressing her body and then slowly getting into those, you know, flat three-fingered side-to-side circles. I think that's like the surest way to a clitoral orgasm. And then once you get to the G-spot, it's really exploratory, and the more information that the woman gives you, better, because some women like very light stimulation, but other women can also take super hard stimulation on their G-spot. And a lot of men I've had, you know, teaching them how to do this, I've seen, you know, like they get so surprised when their partner responds to like really nice hard stimulation, either with that come hither or even like pushing or pressing against it. So you have to explore and learn about your particular partner's body. Every woman's body is so different. But those are some basics, I think, of clit and G-spot play.
And tell my listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web.
www.celesteanddanielle.com, and that's CelesteanDanielle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for joining me this evening. Listeners, the book is called Cockfidence. It's available on Amazon. I'm assuming it's also available on BarnesandNoble.com.
I think so, and it's available on our website as well.
Okay. Listeners, that's going to do it for tonight's show. Again, join me next week. I'm probably going to have an open forum discussion about labels. That's not 100%, so check with my Blog Talk Radio page, my Facebook page, Twitter, but I would say more than likely that's going to be next week's topic about when are labels valid versus invalid, appropriate versus inappropriate, labels such as whore, slut, asshole, jerk, dickhead, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we'll be talking. Then 2 weeks from tonight, I'll have Jordan Harbinger. Until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend. I'll talk to you next Thursday.